The time is 6 o'clock. This is Radio Ghana, the news presented by Lily Defo. In the headlines, UN Special Envoy for West Africa, Dr. Ibn Chambas, expected in Burkina Faso today to ease political tension as President Blaise Compaoré defies calls to resign. World Bank Group President demands fast-tracking emergency fund to tackle threatening diseases like Ebola. National Sanitation Day tomorrow. And Ghana ranked highest in medicine pricing in Africa. First, a summary with Priscilla Wuswansang.
UN Chief Special Envoy for West Africa, Mohamed Ibn Chambas, is expected in Burkina Faso today to try to ease the political turmoil in that country. Burkina Faso's president, Blaise Compaoré, says he will stay in power for a year under a transitional government despite a day of violent protests demanding his resignation. World Bank Group President Dr. Jim Yong Kim is calling for the establishment of a fast-track pandemic emergency fund by the international community to tackle threatening diseases like Ebola. Dr. Kim, who said this during a news conference at the Flagstaff House in Accra, noted that it is wrong to isolate the three countries hit by Ebola. The Minister of Local Government and Rural Development, Julius Zebra, says all is set for the National Sanitation Day across the country, scheduled for tomorrow. In an interview, Mr. Zebra said the event will go a long way to install in every Ghanaian the attitude of doing the right thing so as to check environmental degradation. And about 80% of medicines used in Ghana are imported, thus making the country the highest ranked among African countries in medicine pricing. At the stakeholders forum in Accra, the WHO office in Ghana urged government to reinstitute rebates on taxes to enhance the production of local pharmaceutical companies.
CBC mastering the airwaves with nothing but quality news and programming.
The news now in detail, and we begin from Burkina Faso, where President Blaise Compaoré says he will stay in power for a year under a transitional government following a day of violent protest demanding his resignation. Earlier, demonstrators, angered by his bid to extend his 27-year rule, torched parliament and government buildings. Mr. Compaoré said he will hand over power once the transitional government had completed its 12-month term. He also said he was lifting a stage of siege he had declared earlier. In the previous announcement, Mr. Compaoré called for the military to implement emergency measures. This was followed by a press conference where Army Chief Touare announced that a transitional body would be put in place in consultation with all parties. He added that a return to the constitutional order is expected in no more than 12 months. Meanwhile, UN Chief Ban Ki-moon's Special Envoy for West Africa, Dr. Mohamed Ibn Chambas, is expected in Burkina Faso today to try to ease the crisis. And a senior research fellow at the Lincoln Center for International Affairs, Dr. Ken Arosu, says President Compaoré's quest to be a lifetime president is a major cause of the turmoil in Burkina Faso. Speaking on Behind the News, he says such a posture will not end well. Basing his argument on recent happenings in some other African countries, he said the situation is precarious and requires tactful and diplomatic approaches to deal with it. He spoke to Agatha Samuel.
Blaise Compaoré is somebody who transmogrified and he ruled with an iron fist. And what has sparked all this is that he wants to be a lifetime president. After 27 years, he's not satisfied. And he wants to change the constitution to become a president another 7 years. And the people say, no, this is the situation we have. As you rightly pointed out, the parliament has been burnt. The broadcasting house has been burnt. A number of MPs, their houses have been burnt. And they are now marching on straight message. He had a national address on a private radio and saying that he has declared a state of emergency and that the people should remain calm and he will speak to the opposition. But that is not what the masses want. What they want is that he should immediately resign and hand over the reins of power.
But he declaring a state of emergency and dissolving parliament, what are the implications of these actions?
Personally, I think his declaration of a state of emergency amounts to nothing. If you are at your wit's end, the best he has to do is to hand over power. So I would call for a peaceful demonstration rebellion and not the burning down of buildings and structures, because at the end of it all, they have to rebuild those things with the hard-earned money.
But what makes people like President Kampayo to want to stay in power perpetually and even want to touch the constitution accepted by all the people in order to entrench their power?
I don't want to say it's an African thing, but this is very common with the Francophone countries. But from a psychological perspective, it may be that this man has done so much wrong, has stepped on so many people's foot, that he might feel just like Mugabe, that whenever he's out of power, he will be called to account. And the best way to ensure that he passes safely through is to remain in power so that nobody questions the atrocities that he has visited upon the people.
Senior Research Fellow at LESIAD, Dr. Ken Ahorosu, for his part, an international relations expert, Ibrad Ibrahim, said the situation is a test case for ECOWAS to solve a sub-regional problem. He said its effect will definitely spiral into Ghana. Therefore, President Mahama and his peers have a task to put things right diplomatically.
I think at such a trying moment, the sub-region is grappling with Ebola. A political instability like what we are seeing in Burkina Faso is just the last thing and the sub-region would anticipate. I think Ghana should be getting for an influx of Burkinabe refugees. And the Economist has indicated the volume of intertrade there is between us and Burkina Faso. And from a political point of view, too, I believe Ghana needs to step up to the plate. It will be a test of character for us because all indications point to the fact that there is going to be a regime change for Burkina Faso. I don't think anybody has the carte blanche to be a president for life. You leave the stage when the applause is loudest, and the time has come for African leaders to learn just that. And there is also a strong indication that interventionist policies to tailor-make the governance of the continent so that there would be good governance have largely failed. This guy has been president for 27 years and he still wants to attend to power. We've known from history that he's a shrewd politician and he has faced similar mutinies and protests in the past, right from 1999, and he has survived. But it doesn't look like Blaise Compaoré can survive this one.
There is an argument out there that long staying power sometimes ensures development and proper policies and continuity of projects.
Longevity has proven to have a positive nexus with development in some parts of Africa. Everybody knows, even though Gaddafi was seen as a dictator, the level of development there was in Libya was on par with the continent. But in most cases, where leaders have stayed for too long, they have become engrossed and entrenched with corruption, and they have, you know, made people live in penury in the midst of plenty.
How can we prevent the trickle-down effect of what is happening in Burkina Faso?
Whatever happens, Ghana will be affected in one way or another. Ghana, in such a difficult moment of our economy, is not ready to take in tens of thousands of Burkinabe refugees. So this will have a huge toll on us, both economically and politically. So the earlier ECOWAS was able to stamp its authority and make sure it determines a peaceful trajectory to this current process we have in Burkina Faso, I think the better it will be.
International relations expert Ibrad Ibrahim. On the economic implications of the situation on Ghana, a lecturer at the University of Education Winneba, Dr. Theo Richardson, said if the problems persist for a long period, its impact will be felt in Ghana. Is that Ghana depends on Burkina Faso for vegetables and other imports.
I don't expect that within a short term. The crisis is now unfolding. Should the crisis deteriorate within the next 6 months, it could affect something. But I don't think that apart from Burkina Faso, we don't have alternative sources of supply. If so, supply from Burkina Faso constitutes a substantial proportion of our import of vegetables and meat from Burkina Faso, then ultimately within the next 6 months to 1 year, we should expect some negative feedback effect or adverse effect on the prices of these products. In other words, we should expect prices to go up. And if that should coincide with the IMSI policies that we should expect the government to roll out in January or February. The consequences could be harsh for Ghana. Before December, we should see some resolution of this crisis in Burkina Faso.
A lecturer at the University of Education, winning by Dr. Theo Richardson, on the situation in Burkina Faso. Moving on, the World Bank has announced an additional $100 million as its financial contribution to the fight against Ebola in Liberia, Sierra Leone and Guinea. The money will be used to speed up the deployment of foreign health workers to the three affected countries. The president of the World Bank Group, Dr. Jim Yong Kim, announced this at a news conference with Vice President Kwesi Mensah-Arthur at the Flagstaff House in Accra.
The World Bank Group will be making an additional $100 million available to fill a critical gap in the Ebola response, funding to speed up deployment of foreign health workers to Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. With its latest grant, the World Bank Group's funding for the Ebola fight now is more than $500 million. In recent weeks, there has been, the international response to Ebola has improved significantly. We've had some good news recently out of Liberia involving a drop in recorded cases, although we have to be very, very careful, as this epidemic has had a history of surges in the number of cases, and we're still not sure how to interpret this drop in cases, although it is certainly very good news.
President of the World Bank Group, Dr. Jim Yong Kim. Vice President Mensah-Arthur said Ghana will continue to support efforts by the international community in addressing the Ebola scourge. He said the country is doing this in the spirit of Pan-Africanism.
Ghana has become the focus for the UN effort, Ebola emergency, because we in Ghana have felt since independence that we do not just seek the welfare of the people of this country, but use our position, the independence and so on, to look for the welfare of the African people. So it is in this spirit that the president offered our territory for the UN emergency to respond for Ebola. We're happy to welcome the president of the World Bank Group and hope that the interventions will look at improving the state of the three countries that are most affected by this Ebola, and that the fragility of the economies notwithstanding will be able to remove the scourge, the people of the three countries, and the threat that it poses to us. We have also identified a number of issues relating to the economies of these countries and the impact that the Ebola has had on even the neighboring countries.
Vice President Kwesi Mensah-Arthur. Meanwhile, Dr. Jim Yong Kim has called on the international community to fast track the setting up of a pandemic emergency fund to tackle diseases such as Ebola. He acknowledged that the international community's response to the Ebola outbreak in Liberia, Sierra Leone and Guinea was slow. Answering questions at a news conference at the Flagstaff House in Accra, Dr. Kim said it is wrong for countries to isolate the three countries. Safiya reports.
Dr. Kim said the international community must not delay again in responding to such pandemic.
Are we late? Yes, along with the rest of the global community. But what I want you to know is that we have learned, and this is why I'm talking about this pandemic fund. Next time this happens, we knew of the first cases in December of 2013. So if we had this fund that would be automated to an extent, that it would be run by professionals who do nothing every day but think about how to respond to epidemics, and had substantial funds that would be available to them immediately, then we could have dealt with this in December. The economic impact is because we waited too long. We can't let that happen again.
The World Bank Group president urged countries not to isolate the three hardest hit states, but rather they should help mobilize resources to deal with the pandemic, since that is the only way to prevent the disease from entering their countries.
Isolating these three countries is not the right approach. My very strong sense, in terms of being an infectious disease doctor, having experience working on some of these issues, in other words, only people who are actively sick are infectious. And so I think the best thing for us to do right now is not to isolate these three countries, but to bring appropriate resources, health workers, so that we can provide the kind of care, the kind of things like burial services, so that we can put the epidemic out in these three countries.
we want to believe about protecting our borders, the only way to bring the risk to zero is to stop the epidemics in these three countries.
Vice President Nisahata called for more education so that anybody coming from Africa will not be stigmatized because of the disease.
We did not impose a travel ban. We did not quarantine anybody. So clearly, I think that people who have imposed these bans in other places do not understand the geography, do not understand how big Africa is, and anybody from Africa is deemed suspicious. And I think a bit more education in some of those places would be good.
Dr. King will also hold discussions with the UN Mission for Ebola Emergency Response based in Accra. Saitiya, reporting for Radio Ghana.
And as international efforts to tackle the Ebola outbreak gathers momentum, Ghana has introduced additional measures to contain any outbreak at all government hospitals across the country. From now on, any patient who reports at any health facility with any kind of disease will be screened for possible signs and symptoms of Ebola. This came up at Tema during an Ebola simulation exercise at the Tema General Hospital. About 30 health personnel were taken through stages of handling an Ebola patient. Yvonne Atilego witnessed the simulation exercise and reports.
The simulation exercise took the form of handling a patient who reports at the hospital and the process that follows afterwards. Health personnel were neatly dressed in their PPEs, armed with equipment needed for the simulation exercise. The isolation unit has also been equipped. Health personnel involved in the exercise expressed confidence in handling any such case should it be reported.
Yes, I should say we see ourselves ready because we have gone for training and then we have been assured that when the conditions come, the logistics and things are there. No, yes, of course, we are ready from the way we responded when the patient was brought in. When we did the triaging, then bringing the patient here, the doctor attending him and the nurses taking the blood samples and then setting the IV line to treat. The patient is vomiting. So fluid loss and needs to be replaced. And you see the doctor doing it and the nurse supporting the doctor. So we are ready.
During the exercise, few lapses occurred concerning timeliness of health personnel in attending to an Ebola patient. But the director of institutional care division of the Ghana Health Service, Dr. Samokaba, said there is no cause for alarm.
One of the things we need to get clear is that even after this exercise, we are better than before. So I believe, and I believe strongly in that, yes, we will be ready to handle any case should we have it. The health staff, their morale has been boosted. They now understand what it takes, and we'll be checking into all the little mistakes that we would have made. We will correct them, and then we'll make things a better way.
Dr. Kaba also took time to explain the process of detecting a patient with Ebola.
What we saw was a patient who was suspected. He was being brought by a taxi to the Tema General Hospital to the case holding place. Over there, you got a group of nurses who received the case and then the relative of the case. Then they did all the necessary things to treat and give the patient the first aid and then took a sample sent to Noguchi. Noguchi calls back that the sample is positive. Then from there, once it's positive, you move the patient to the treatment center and then you give him the treatment. Then we simulated that this patient did die. So with that, you call in the AMA, which is the burial team, and then they evacuate the patient to the burial ground. Then we also have a grave duct, and then the patient is being buried.
Simulation exercise will be continued regularly to equip health personnel across the country.
Yvonne Atilego reporting. Ghana has been ranked highest among African countries in medicine pricing, according to the medicine price component of a study by the WHO. About 80% of medicines used in Ghana are imported. This has contributed to the high pricing in the country. At a stakeholders forum in Accra, the WHO office in Ghana urged governments to reinstitute rebates on taxes to enhance the production of local pharmaceutical companies. A report by Yvonne Sariofe and Gifty Obing.
The price of medicines have always been a sensitive issue to manage, having interest and influences in both public and private sectors, including industry and the returns on taxation. Speaking on good governance of pharmaceuticals, the impact of medicine prices on the sustainability of Ghana's National Health Insurance Scheme, Madam Andrews Annan said medicine prices must be regulated in the public sector and government must make sure that the supply chain is efficient. She hoped that the communique which will be released from the forum will be discussed at the cabinet level to improve on the tax situation.
There used to be tax rebate for manufacturers for raw materials. That has been removed. And so even for the local manufacturers who are not many, they are now complaining that when they manufacture their medicines, the cost will go up. We don't know why the rebates were removed. Maybe we have to start talking to government about that, so that they look into it and remove those rebates for local manufacturers. Because if the medicine is produced at your doorstep, it easily becomes available to you and also creates work for the people in the country. There was a survey over the African region and we realized that in Ghana, for diseases that are chronic, the lowest paid government worker has to work so many number of days before he can afford to buy the medicine. But in other countries, that is the basis. How many days do you have to work to be able to afford some medicine? And the number of days in Ghana was very high.
The Minister of Health, Dr. Kweku Ajimanensa, says the establishment and sustained management of the health insurance scheme, despite its challenges, has removed the financial barriers in accessing health care in Ghana. He charged stakeholders in the health sector to play their roles effectively to ensure that the health insurance is sustainable.
In order to address the issues holistically, due cognizance must be given to the roles of the general population, healthcare professionals, policymakers, managers of health, financing mechanisms, as well as the role of the healthcare seeker. We all have a part to play in ensuring sustainability of our health insurance. We also collectively need to ensure that we understand these roles and play them appropriately, efficiently, and accountably.
The Medicines Transparency Alliance is an initiative that brings together relevant stakeholders in the public and private sectors to improve sustainable access to medicines through increased transparency in the pharmaceutical sector.
Yvonne Asariofe reporting. Government and labor unions have decided to meet again next week Tuesday to finalize negotiations aimed at finding an amicable settlement to the protracted strike over the second-tier pension scheme. This was the outcome of a meeting yesterday between the two parties to resolve the impasse. At a news conference addressed by Deputy Minister of Communications, Phyllis Kwachufusu, and Deputy Minister of Employment and Labour Relations, Baba Jamal, the minister announced that government has tabled proposals to the labour unions which he believes will bring an end to the impasse. Ibrahim Kwarson and Aurelia Kande have this report.
Two of the proposals are that government will suspend its actions against the labor unions and the National Labor Commission. Also, it will withdraw the suit against the unions that is currently pending in the court. The deputy minister, however, declined to give the rest of the proposals till after Tuesday meeting when the two parties meet again.
The Forum of Labor Unions informed us that they needed to hold consultations with their legal counsel on whether or not they could continue with negotiations, even in the face of pendency of an action that government had brought on this matter relating to interpretation of aspects of the pensions act and relating to aspects of the labor law. Government indicated its willingness to ensure that the action that it had brought before the courts regarding this matter was withdrawn if the labor unions were willing to also call off their strike so that there could be a congenial atmosphere in order to facilitate negotiations and dialogue. The labor unions indicated that they were still determined to push through their position on how the pension scheme should be run. Government was, however, willing to make new proposals, which we did table. They requested that we put those proposals in writing and let them have it by 10 a.m. tomorrow.
Mr. Kwachifusu was optimistic that the proposals by government are acceptable to bring labor back to the negotiating table. Mr. Fusu said labor has demanded written assurances from government on the proposals, a demand government obliged. But when it was time for labor unions to do same by calling off the strike, they demanded to consult their legal team before returning to the negotiating table next week, Tuesday.
New proposals that government put before them, and those proposals capture what has to be is done in order to restore confidence in government's willingness to ensure transparency and due process in the management of the pension funds. We have made new proposals that go to the heart of the specific concern that both parties have.
Deputy Minister of Information and Labour Relations Felix Kwachifusu said government has kept faith with the unions in the interest of the country by backing down on its demands. He hoped that the labour unions would do same by reciprocating the gesture by calling off the strike. The Deputy Minister stated that the declaration by the National Pensions Regulatory Authority, NPRA, that funds in the second tier account is intact should put to rest any mistrust and fear being harboured by the labour unions.
Ibrahim Kwarten and Aurelia Kande South of that report. Tomorrow has been declared National Sanitation Day. Every citizen is expected to come out and rid the environment of filth. The Minister of Local Government and Rural Development throws more light on the day.
Generally, I think we had rolled it out in phases. The initial stage was to create awareness and to make people aware of what we intend doing. And then the other one is to also move on to the consultative stage where we had approached the various stakeholders to lend a hand. The issue at stake is not necessarily about how many people jump into gutters and things like that. The objective is to try and appeal to the conscience and minds and hearts of our people so that we all come to the realization that as a country, and more so our dear country, be one of the countries, sub-Saharan Africa, to gain independence. We always rank first. It's very, very unfortunate for us to find ourselves in the ranking of the countries that rank the bottom 10. And so it is a national issue that we should all look at it. So that is what we're trying to bring it out. The good side of it is that most of the people that we've consulted have come out to support the campaign.
And that was Minister of Local Government and Rural Development, Julius Deborah, on tomorrow's National Sanitation Day. That ends the news from Radio Ghana.